Our scripture text for today is from Isaiah chapter 58, and it's taken from the 8th verse. So if you want to follow along, I believe it's on the sideboards for us. Isaiah the prophet writes, "Then your light will break forth like the dawn, and your healing will quickly appear. Then your righteousness will go before you, and the glory of the Lord will be your rear guard. Then you will call, and the Lord will answer your cry for help, and he will say, 'Here am I.' If you do away with the yoke of oppression, with the pointing finger and malicious talk, and if you spend yourselves in behalf of the hungry and satisfy the needs of the oppressed, then your light will rise in the darkness, and your night will become like the noonday. The Lord will guide you always. He will satisfy your needs in a sun-scorched land, and he will strengthen your frame. You will be like a well-watered garden, like a spring whose waters never fail. Your people will rebuild the ancient ruins and will raise up the age-old foundations. You will be called repairer of the broken walls and the restorer of streets with dwellings." Here ends the reading. Good morning, Thanksgiving. I'm glad you made it through the elements this morning, the rain. Is it still raining out there? You don't look as wet as the 8:15 crew looked this morning. So, and we're still getting over our game last night. So lots of prayers and laments as well from last night. But I'm just so glad you're here today. My name is David Wakeup. I'm one of the pastors. And my wife Lisa and I are going to bring the message to you together this morning. So I'm just going to do a little intro, right? Pastors always got to take their chance to get a few words in before. But I, as you see that little sermon bumper, and some of you had heard about this sermon series beforehand, when you heard the words unashamed, you might have thought, whoa, this is going to be such a doom and gloom, kind of a melancholy series. And we said not back then, and we said today, it's not about that at all. It's about an unprecedented amount of joy that we believe God wants to bring to us as individuals and as a congregation. You remember the cup I found when I was eating at the Subway, is right? Warning, consuming may cause joy. And we said, you know, engaging in this series may just cause joy that you never knew you missed, okay? So what we found over this last month in talking with you is that whether you just kind of thought, you know, I'm a Christian, but I don't have a lot of joy, maybe a lot of confidence, a lot of freedom in my life, or some of you have said, you know, I've just been weighed down by this for years, no matter where you are, God has more for us. How many of you think that God has more for you today, all right? It's about how you kind of come into the room even sometimes. If you think God's going to speak, then he probably will. If you just kind of shut off, oftentimes God is a gentleman and respect that as well. So, but we talked the first week, we said there's this barrier to this thing, and we called it shame, but it wasn't the shame that maybe you thought about from the past, like this shame on you type of thing. And we defined it in reference to guilt. Remember that? So guilt, feeling bad for something you've done. And certainly we come to worship and we are able to confess our sins and be reminded that our guilt has been taken to the cross. But one part of that that we don't often talk about in church is shame. That you may come and say, you know, I keep confessing, but I don't feel any better. And so shame, we talked about, is feeling bad for who you are. Feeling bad like you've done some things and now this is just who you are. Someone's done something to you. Now this is who I am. Feeling like you're not enough. Feeling like this is the way it will always be. And it really does impact our relationships. How many of you have ever met somebody and maybe decided you wanted to grow into a friendship and you thought, boy, if they ever knew this about me or the way that I think or what I've done in the past, they won't want to connect with me. I'm not worthy of the connection that I would like to have. Yeah. And it's very, very interesting that the very first story in the Bible is all about this. Right? Adam and Eve were created, and it says they were naked and they felt no shame. What it means is they were comfortable with each other. They were comfortable in their relationship with God. It was good. But it's only one chapter later that it says they were hiding. They were fearful in their shame. And we all know from the story, which is really our story, it's because they said, you know what? We don't need you, God. We can do it on our own. We know the best way. Now, what we have also brought in over the last couple of weeks, and Pastor Billy and Janine did just such a wonderful job of bringing the message the last couple of weeks, as we found that from neuroscience, this really does change our brains. Our brains begin to shut down in a sense. And there's an antidote to that. Neuroscientists tell us that we're actually wired for belonging and for love. And if we don't get those things, scientists will tell us we usually do one of three things. We numb it, right? We overeat, we overspend, we overwork. So we can just put that aside. Or we perfect, right? Hey, if you think I got my life together, and if my life's perfect and I work harder and I impress you, then I don't have to deal with the shame in my life. Or we just pretend, don't we? Hey, I got it all together. You know, the happy Christian. How you doing? Oh, I'm great. Couldn't be better. And the next day we read about, oh, lives are falling apart. What we've said, though, is that what kind of church do we want to be as we go into the future? Do we want to be that kind of church that says, hey, I got to pretend, or I got to perfect, or I got to numb? Or do we want to be a safe place where people can actually come and say, it's okay to not be okay, because this message of the gospel is that while we were still sinners, while we were stuck in our shame, God sent his son, and he died for us, the most vulnerable thing that anyone could ever do. So, that's where we pivot to today. Scientists, both secular and faith-based scientists, would tell us this. The best place for this to happen is in the context of a safe community where joy can be encouraged and where sharing is also encouraged. And so Lisa and I today are going to share just a little snapshot of our life, a little bit of vulnerability. We're never going to ask you to do this unless you want to do what we're about ready to do. But what we are asking you to do is consider this, is that maybe after today's message, and maybe God has been prompting you before today, is that you would begin to speak to someone. Maybe it's your spouse, maybe it's a brother, maybe it's a sister, I don't know who it is, a parent, and to say, I just had to be honest with you about something, and to start this journey, because the antidote to shame is vulnerability, which brings joy in our lives, when we don't have to hide in our secrets anymore. And so that's where we're going to go this morning. And so it's great to have Lisa. Let's give her a round of applause for coming up here this morning. Yeah, we're excited to have you. All right, so we're just going to kind of share our story a little bit back and forth. And this isn't the easiest thing for us to do. I was thinking this morning, oftentimes I'll think, oh, we're down with two messages and two to go, and you know, it's kind of enjoy the process. But today I can't say that it's as enjoyable as I remember, but not because of you, it's just because of the subject matter that we're dealing with. So we would ask for your prayers and your grace as we share a little bit of a snapshot of our life. So I'll start at the beginning. I grew up in a family that far from perfect. I'm sure we had our struggles, but I know my perception was it was kind of like the Leave It to Beaver family. I don't know, that's a little old of a metaphor now, a comparison, but that's the way I viewed growing up for me.
So unlike David, I would relate our family to a more contemporary family, reality show-based family, the Kardashians. Minus all the girls, because I was surrounded by brothers, but definitely all the drama.
Yeah. So I believe my mom and dad loved each other, and I have three older brothers. There's a picture of our early family life, and life was good, you know, but we were deeply competitive with one another and probably still are a touch today. But I went off to graduate school and college, and I was probably rather a little immature in my relationships. And so at age 27, I had a few casual relationships, but when I moved to Nebraska and began my role here as a pastor, I was hoping to meet the one, right? The one that I would marry someday. And this did not happen immediately, and I grew increasingly frustrated. I began to ask myself, what was it about me? What's wrong with me? My friends were all meeting people, and it seemed like they were getting married. Why wasn't I? And perhaps I was called to be single. Perhaps this was God's plan, but it certainly wasn't my plan A in my mind. So I continued to date half-heartedly into my early 30s until I was introduced to Lisa, and we enjoyed our first date at the Rose Theater, and we saw the play It's a Wonderful Life. The fairy tale was beginning, right? Not.
So as I mentioned, I had four older brothers. So people often asked me if I was the princess of the family. And if you look at our family picture, you might think that was the case. The way they so lovingly are looking upon me, I'm sure the photographer forced them to do that. I wouldn't say I was a princess. I would say I had some partial treatment in the family, being the only girl and the youngest. But far from a princess, I was very much a tomboy. It was very important for me to fit in with my older brothers. It was very important for me to keep up with them. So I worked hard to be a part of that clan. We grew up Catholic. We attended church consistently. My parents were involved in various ministries and activities. And I really did like our church. I really did love growing up Catholic, and I appreciate my Catholic upbringing. I would say that I had questions along the way, and it seems like when I'd ask those, especially within our family, like, how can we do this, or why we do this, why do we do this, it was typically, well, that's just the way we've always done it. There wasn't really a deep theological explanation, so I didn't feel I had a real firm understanding of the church when I was growing up. I left for college, and I found a local Newman Center, a Catholic-based church that I attended occasionally, but not consistently. And I think I did that, as I look back, more out of a routine and out of my Catholic tradition, sometimes for comfort, but it really wasn't out of any deep-seated faith, and it certainly wasn't out of a relationship with Jesus. Now I understand that the lack of that relationship with Jesus was just a huge void that began to grow in my life as I grew up. I never even really understood what it meant to have a relationship with Jesus. So as I look back, I know that I just attempted to fill that void with a variety of things and activities and different people. As I mentioned earlier, fitting in was really important to me, so I just began to choose things and activities that would ensure that I would fit in, that I would connect, and I would belong. So I was in my late 20s, and one afternoon we were at a staff lunch, and a coworker, a friend of mine, brought up this idea of setting me up, and she wanted to introduce me to her pastor. So, exactly. In my mind, I'm like, okay, number one, I'm not really into being set up. That wasn't really my thing. I was pretty content at the time. But secondly, and the most important point, was being raised Catholic, I can honestly tell you, I was not in the least bit interested being introduced or set up to a pastor. And I remember saying to my friend, I find that disturbing that your pastor dates.
Not anymore. Yeah. But
is that even legal? So, so after some pressure and convincing, I obviously conceded. And on December 9th, 1999, I met Pastor David Whitcup. And as he said, we went to the Rose Theater and we saw It's a Wonderful Life.
So we started dating, and early on it was great. We had lots of laughs and fun and just enjoyed being together. And then I don't think we planned it this way, but early on in our relationship we have what we affectionately call now our scar-sharing talk. It just kind of came up one night, and it was a night when we shared some personal things. And all of us have been in any kind of friendship or relationship, you know, when there's a possibility to go deeper, there's maybe some cards you need to throw on the table and let the other person know about. And so we were vulnerable that night. And I shared several things, but one of the things I shared about was my recent open heart surgery. And I don't know, but it seems a little silly today, but it was very real back then. I was fearful that she might think of me as damaged goods, right? Here I was this young guy, but I had all these health issues concerning my heart. So I know I did a lot of processing after this evening and wondered if we would maybe go to the next level in our relationship.
So as David just shared, yes, a few dates down the road, we had that memorable evening of scar sharing. He shared about his heart condition and his recent open heart surgery, and then it was my turn. So I reluctantly admitted that I too had a scar, but mine was not physical. In fact, it was emotional. And it was deeply emotional. It was then that I shared with him that I had been divorced. I was on a healing journey prior to meeting David, but telling him about this divorce brought everything back to the surface. To say that exposing the real me was that evening was difficult would be a huge understatement. But it wasn't nearly as difficult as the days to follow, as we did take time to process what each of us had shared. I was flooded with fear. I was flooded with the fear of rejection, the fear of feeling unworthy, the fear of being judged. Looking back now, the best way I could describe it is just that I was consumed with shame. In fact, David kept a letter that I wrote to him just a day or two after that scar-sharing night. I don't know if anybody's familiar with Friends, but there was a 7-page letter that was written in that sitcom that was kind of a joke, but mine's only 5, and it was only front, so. But it is handwritten, so you kind of get where we were and what day and stage. And I have to put on the readers to read it, so. It was important for me to open up my past to you. It was also very difficult and humiliating. Like I said the other night, I would rather lock up my past in a closet and just hide it there from the rest of the world. I'm fearful when people get close enough to me and begin to see past my facade, they won't like or accept what they see. Not that I feel I put up the facade as much anymore. In fact, I feel more genuine with myself and with others now more than ever before in my life. But I guess I feel that who I am now and who I was before are very different. Although I've opened up and exposed myself to a few people, you included, even if they do forgive or accept me and my mistakes, it's not going to mean as much until I can allow God and myself to forgive. So my hope is that you'll be there for the journey as a friend or otherwise. Just backtracking, here's a little bit about my story before that point in time. So my parents obviously didn't have a perfect marriage. They were married, though, for 58 years until my mom passed away. But somehow my brothers and I missed their modeling of commitment and perseverance, because unfortunately 4 out of the 5 of us did experience divorce. I married somebody from my hometown that I had grown up with, and through the years we had an active social life that was full of friends and just simply entertainment. It was a marriage that quickly dissolved because for me the relationship was based on little more than merely social life and materialism. I understand now that I was seeking a sense of security and belonging, but I was going about it in very unhealthy and very unsatisfying ways. As the insecurity and unhealthiness began to grow, things quickly began to unravel. And with nobody or nothing to center us, we became destructive not only to ourselves, but to one another. And we were divorced less than 2 years after we were married. So here I was, divorced, and a divorced Catholic. And I felt shunned from the church. Our mutual friends weren't mutual anymore, and I was unable to attain my previous lifestyle. And I entered a dark place. I spoke earlier of that void. It just felt like it became an abyss at that time. I felt like a failure. I felt judged. I felt alone, and I felt so unworthy, and I was hopeless. I did have one good friend that stood by me throughout this, and she just continually invited me to go back to church. The ironic part of that is that the one place that could provide the healing I so desperately needed was the one place where I didn't feel worthy enough to enter. It took a long time, and it took a lot of convincing, but it did finally happen. And I went to Sacred Heart Catholic Church, where God's light slowly began to break through my darkness. My life was transformed through the relationships that I established at Sacred Heart, and slowly I began to share my story. My fears somewhat faded as I experienced acceptance. These new friendships were based on authenticity and a shared faith, and it was nothing like I had ever experienced before in my life. And although these new friendships were life-altering, nothing compared to the most important relationship that I was beginning to build. I was finally beginning to understand what it meant to have a relationship with Jesus. It was a long journey and a long road. I had been led back to church where I felt I truly belonged. I now had healthy Christian-based friendships. I had a new job. It was kind of my dream job. And I had a network of friendships there that were extremely healthy. I started to feel whole and healthy. So that takes us to the scar sharing session. And as I reflect back on that evening, I now realize that it was probably inappropriately named because for me it wasn't a scar. It was still a wound, and I had just reopened it, and it was painful. David spoke into my pain, and he introduced me to the full concept of grace. It's something that I had missed in my upbringing somehow. So here I was, now embarking on another life-changing journey, which actually became two journeys. One was just beginning to understand what grace was, what it meant. The other was accepting it. That was the hard part. And it's another story for another time. And I told David, maybe I can come back another time and share that.
We'll see.
If I don't abuse the microphone. So I experienced deeper healing through God's grace, and David and I also began to experience a deeper relationship. There were a few concerns that had come up between us, and we decided to take a break and search our hearts about our future. Although the voices had continued to whisper to me through the years, they had become much louder during this time. Those voices reminded me of my past shame and my fears of rejection and unworthiness. I didn't know how to quiet the voices, so I would just stuff them deeper and deeper. God's plan did begin to unfold, and marriage was in our future. And as I prepared for our wedding, I started to become very aware of what I was going to be leaving behind and a little less clear of what I would be entering into.
So let's go back just a little bit to that evening. We made it through that night and we began to date life was going good. But as a 32-year-old bachelor, I had my list, right? A list of things that had to be checked. So it really wasn't just being gut-level honest. It really wasn't on the plan to marry someone who'd been married before. Then there was the Catholic-Lutheran thing. Then there was being at different places in our faith. And then there was differing views on money and in our upbringing past. Surprise, right? Yeah, that's right. And I knew from my perspective that if she was to be the one for me, I know this sounds very arrogant and judgmental, it probably was, if she was to be the one, she would have to check those marks. So I just felt like it was too much to overcome. And so we decided we were going to take a break. And during that time, I went over to a friend's house who knew both of us very well. And all I was looking for was confirmation of my decision. And so as I began to talk to him about all the things that were mounting up, and he went over and he grabbed a little plant, a plant that was wilted and didn't look like it had a lot of life to it. And he looked at that plant and he said, you know, if I gave this plant a little bit of water, a little bit of sun, a little bit of fertilizer, that plant would come back to life and it would thrive. And he said, I know you and Lisa pretty well. I think God does have a plan for the two of you. And I think, like this plant, I think with a little bit of investment from God and from both of you, things can happen. So I did not get the answer I wanted that night. And so I went home and kind of struggled through that a little bit. And Lisa and I began to talk, and we decided that we would give it another try. And our love, like that plant, continued to grow. And so we got engaged and married in December of 2001.
So it was a difficult transition becoming Pastor David's wife. I'm just going to be honest about it. And I will admit, it really wasn't David, and it wasn't the church. The people were so warm and welcoming, and it was an amazing opportunity for me. It really was me. David had been established here already. He had his roles. He had his responsibilities. He had his life here. My life was in Omaha. So I moved here to Bellevue. I left my church. I left the Catholic faith. And I just was trying to figure out where I fit in here for a long time. At that time, I still had my world outside of Thanksgiving, but I was quickly learning that Thanksgiving was becoming more and more of my world. I felt I was losing bits and pieces of myself. As I mentioned, I had moved, and now I was in a role that I had no idea what it meant. Growing up Catholic, I didn't know very many pastors' wives. But I did have a mother-in-law and two sister-in-laws who were pastors' wives. And then at that time, instead of looking at that as a resource, though, I think I was intimidated by them. At one point, a gentleman from the congregation approached me, and he shared his excitement about David and I and his gratefulness, what we were modeling for the church, and especially for the youth at that time. We were both pretty involved in the youth ministry. And as his words, and his exact words, I'm pretty sure, because I remember it very vividly, he said, we were modeling the right way to do things. And his words were kind, and they were genuine, and they were meant to be encouraging. But as soon as they hit my heart, I felt division within myself. I heard in my mind, yeah, you and David are doing it the right way, but you didn't do it the right way. And an internal battle began again in my heart. Who am I going to be? Am I the Lisa who did it the right way, or am I the Lisa who didn't? And I didn't even know if it was possible to be both at that time, especially as a pastor's wife. Then I started to doubt, I'm not even worthy to be a pastor's wife. The fear, the unworthiness, the insecurity, and the shame began to creep through the cracks. It was a slow process. It's
your turn. Okay. All right. I thought so. Yeah. All right. So we've been married 3.5 years, and then the kind of chaos hit. We had twins, Jacob and Jeremiah, and then shortly thereafter, we had Mariah and Nate. And frankly, there wasn't a lot of us time. Life was completely focused on child rearing as we made the decision for Lisa to stay home, and life had profoundly changed. Marriage had its challenges like anybody, but I thought it was moving along pretty well. until just a few years back. It seemed like there was an increased amount of distance in our relationship. Talking was very mechanical between the two of us, kind of like who's picking up the kids and who's doing this and who's doing that. The thing that attracted us initially is we just laughed all the time. We noticed that we weren't laughing a lot anymore. While I enjoyed our children very much, there was not a lot of us time at all. I know I felt disconnected, but I wasn't sure how to articulate it. I didn't even know it at the time. I didn't have words to articulate it, but what I was feeling was an increased amount of shame. I must be a horrible husband. I'm a competitor. I'm going to be the best husband there is, yet our marriage doesn't seem like it's where it should be. And I was certainly thinking, she's not a very good wife, and we're never going to be happy. And the kids are going to be impacted by our dysfunction. And then Lisa shared with me that she'd been holding on to some things from early on in our marriage. And she impressed upon me that these were not things that we could talk through very quickly, that she would have to do some thinking, and then she would let me know later when we had gotten to a state of resolution. I must admit, in my heart, I was extremely resentful. Why was she bringing up things from over 15 years ago? Why hadn't we talked about this earlier? I grew increasingly frustrated, and over time, I began to focus on the things that I could control, things at work and our kids and different things that I was involved with. But the shame kept piling up more and more, and I became fearful. I'm a pastor. I better have a model marriage. I won't have anything to talk about up here as well. And what will people think of us if we actually got divorced at some point? What a total failure. Everything my life stood for, that shame was whispering, will be counted as naught. It was hard to talk to my family about it, too. It's disheartening what the shame whispers into your mind. Well, your parents had a great marriage. Your brothers all had a great marriage. Your friends all have a great marriage. And look at you. What a failure. Why don't you have a good marriage? It's probably you. And I believe that Lisa and I both wanted a happy marriage, but we were clueless at this point of how to do that. We were both people of faith, both praying, but the frustrations just continued to mount and mount and mount.
So as I said, it was a slow process. I think I'll leave my glasses on, it'll help. It was a slow process, but through the years, that shame that was so deeply embedded within me continued to seep through those cracks, like I mentioned earlier, and it just weakened me, and it weakened my spirit. David and I struggled to remain strong and committed, and our faith kept us together, but everything else seemed challenging. Before we were married, we had discussed the types of ministries we'd like to do together and how we would like to serve in the church together. But as we tried to find ways to partner in the church and in ministry, it frequently ended up as just a frustrating experience. That voice of shame whispered to me that I was inadequate and I was useless. And more, I began to feel that I wasn't worthy of his time or his attention. I wasn't gifted enough to partner with him. I didn't feel like partners in our marriage, and I just felt divided from him. I was starting to feel resentful. My relationship with him was strained. My relationship with the kids was becoming strained. And I felt our whole family system was strained. And the whispers were getting stronger and louder. I was a failure as a wife. I was a failure as a mother. I was certainly a failure as a pastor's wife. And my biggest fear was that I was going to fail in another marriage, and it was going to be all my fault.
I know internally there were lots of conversations going on, lots of lamenting to God, especially at 3 a.m. in the morning. And finally, God convinced me to speak to just a few close friends about what was really going on. And we were encouraged by these friends to go through some intentional prayer ministry called Restoring the Foundations and Cleansing Stream, and there's a few others we have here. But God began to reveal some of the issues I know in my life at that point that I was holding on to that was keeping me from experiencing the joy that I so desperately wanted. We were certainly not working as a team. We were not praying in any meaningful way. And frankly, we were both growing increasingly frustrated. And I know my prayer at this time was, help our marriage, Lord. Please change Lisa. Then everything would be better. Yes. Amen, right? Yeah. So through that process, though, is then when many of the breakthroughs came for the increased amount of joy that we feel now. Even though I knew a lot about forgiveness theologically, it's a whole different ballgame to live into forgiveness with someone up close and personal and to receive forgiveness from that person. Everybody ever always says you can't change other people. You can only change yourself, and God can only do that. Well, I was trying to change Lisa in a variety of ways that I thought would be the ways that she should change. And finally, I was able to give that up and say, Lord, she belongs to you, and I need to do some serious work with you about me. I learned how I'd wounded her earlier on, how she felt taken for granted, and I was open to hearing about that at this point because I was insecure. What if this thing didn't go in the right direction? And I wasn't cherishing her. I wasn't backing her up with the children. And so we finally prayed together, Lord, we are powerless to change us. And that's when the healing really began to flow. And we were taught, instead of being enemies of one another on certain issues, that we began to lift each other up in our brokenness, in our prayers, and not focusing solely on what's wrong with the other person, but continuing by God's grace to discover what's right about the person. And our lives, I can speak, I think, for both of us, are not ones that can be put on autopilot when it comes to our marriage, because we believe, and we've been evidence of this, there is an enemy who whispers into our ears, what you're feeling now will be permanent. You will never have joy. You are a failure. And even though I hate to admit that, because I'm a competitive guy, and I want you to think my life is perfect, those whispers have been loud at many points in my life. But I believe, instead of believing those lies, that we hear another voice that says, you're right, you're not enough, but I'm more than enough for both of you together.
So we were in this fast spiral downward, and as David shared and admitted, he went into overdrive, trying to fix everything, especially me. And no matter how hard I tried, I just couldn't let go of all the unworthiness, the fear, the insecurity, and now anger and bitterness. I did go through a prayer ministry and sought out a mentor, and as David shared, we went through the Restoring the Foundations ministry together. So now we were equipped. We had tools, we had communication, we had hope, but we were still struggling. So I was meeting with a mentor at that time, and this was when David was being considered for the lead pastor role here at church. She just simply asked how I felt about the possibility. I gave a rather flippant response to that, and she interrupted and clarified, what I'm talking about is, are you prepared for the spiritual mantle that he will take upon himself for this new role and responsibility? She continued and explained, are you prepared for the attacks that will be upon you and your family? I admit, I really was somewhat clueless as to what she was talking about. I didn't understand the gist of what she was saying. But the attacks that she was referring to were spiritual. And then I had an awakening, or a kairos. I looked back over the past couple years, and I realized that all the hurt, the disappointment, the stress, the conflict, the strain, all of this intensified about the time that David was being considered for this new opportunity. And it was then that I realized I had been fighting the wrong battle all along. This battle wasn't against flesh and blood. It wasn't against David, but it was against the spiritual darkness that had overcome us. And as I looked back over the years, I realized that the devil had been whispering insecurity, unworthiness, fear, hurt, and shame into my life, into my ears, my entire life. And he was doing the same thing to David. And by believing those lies, we had simply invited him into our relationship and into our family. My shame would just spiral David's shame, and vice versa. It was toxic. He had used everything to pit us against each other and to stir up havoc in our relationship and family. So we took steps. We began to share what was going on in our lives, in our individual lives, and in our marriage and in our family. We sought help, which we continue to do. And with guidance, we are learning to take authority over the devil and his interference in our lives, not even knowing what that meant months ago. And we also learn to recognize his lies and learn how to break those off. We now work together to replace his lies with God's truth. It is a process. We are not looking for a happy ending, but we are taking steps and we are experiencing God's joy.
Yeah. So some of that you may connect to, and some of it you may not. But our purpose in sharing that with you this morning is this. We believe God's calling this to be a safe place. A safe place where it's okay to not be okay. Because Christians, we're famous for pretending, aren't we? We're famous for acting like we've got all our lives together. And we're not going to ask anyone, or certainly not everyone, to come up and do what we did this morning. But we do believe that God wants more for all of us. He wants more joy, more freedom, more peace, more of everything that's good for our lives. So just want to leave you with three concepts. Got to get the 3 points in, right? And it's not a 3-point sermon, but it's this. Just the words that we introduced to you the very first week to begin to speak up. To begin to speak up to God, because God already knows it all. And he wants more for us, to speak up to someone else who you can trust and begin this journey together. To begin to team up. We've got wonderful life groups, wonderful opportunities to get into some groups where we can share what's really going on in our lives and then begin to get some inspiration that this is not the way it always has to be. And then, for Lisa and I, to pray up. That was so instrumental of having people involved in our lives for a season especially, but in an ongoing way as well, that we could begin to really pour out our hearts to God. Because when you're in the midst of it, it seems like there is no way out, and there's certainly you're not going to tell anyone else about it. But we believe God can overcome all of that. So we just want you to take a few moments as Jeannie and the team come out. They're going to sing a song that's very meaningful to us as a couple. And I believe as you listen to the words to this song, as you participate in worship over these next couple of minutes, just allow the Spirit of God to connect the dots maybe that he was bringing to your heart, making your heart beat a little faster over these last few moments, and let God minister into your lives. Amen.